Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and Carl was supposed to be here, but he was all tuckered out because we're at an economy. And he was like, I'm feeling a little tired. So I think he's napping and trying to feel a little more energized for the brewery visit tonight. But very exciting episode today. It's always great to interview people in person. And David, you emailed me a few months ago. You were like, hey, maybe have a boring middle story, which is where a lot of people are. And it's not boring. It's just, you know, you're trucking along, but you've had some decent like changes in the last few months, which I want you to talk about. And you said your wife, Jill, she was going to be around and we're going to have a nice conversation. So here we are at economy. And that is why my voice is trash. It sounds like I've been smoking cigars for like 3 days straight, but it's just from talking to so many people. So we're going to talk about your background, and you're taking a mini retirement now, so we'll get into that kind of stuff and just like your money background, where you are in the journey. So with all that said, thanks a lot for taking the time. So David, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? And I'll let Jill talk about herself in a second too. So just a little intro, who you are, what are you doing, that sort of thing.
I am from Michigan, and I grew up pretty poor. So my the way I look at money is pretty scarce, generally speaking, filtered through that lens most of my life. I was always good with money, saved a lot of money, had a troubled youth, you could say. I had a kid 2 months after I graduated from high school. Her mother got into some trouble, you could say, and I had custody of her until she's now an adult. She's 19 and a half. And so a lot of responsibility very early in adulthood. I made all the right choices. Like, I got the right degree and job and kept saving. I'd never heard of FI until about 2 years ago. And you could say I was more than halfway there. You could say I was accidental FI, but that was coming from a, let's say a fear around money. Scared to spend it, scared to do anything that wasn't essential, have hobbies, things like that. That's really good for the pocketbook, but it's not great for the psyche.
Gotcha. So it's kind of scarcity, and you were like, I'm saving because I know like we may really need this.
Yeah. And at some point in time that wasn't true anymore, but I couldn't understand that wasn't true anymore. I kept saving like we needed more wood for the long winter that wasn't really coming. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like just this, and Jill and I have been married for 9 years, been together almost 10. I mean, there should have been more changes in our marriage, right? She went back to work, so the income almost doubled and no changes were made. So the last couple years, we've been trying to change the way we approach money, spending more, relaxing, finding more enjoyment, more community, you know, taking classes, paying to take a class, things like that. It's been a fair amount of work, but like any muscle, you know, it gets stronger the more we do it. And I'm feeling a lot better. But yeah, I quit my job in January, decided to quit my job in October. And if you'd have talked to me in like September, I probably would have said I was working for the next 10 years. Yeah. Like I didn't know. I might've been one of the last people to know I was quitting.
All right. And then, we'll dig into a lot of that. But yeah, Jill, what's your story? What kind of work do you do and that sort of thing?
I am a property tax assessor for a municipality in Michigan. I grew up middle class. I've always been a saver. Yeah. Like, I get my birthday money or Christmas and allowance, and I just save it. And my brother and sister would be like, how do you have so much money? I'm like, get the same amount. I just don't spend it like you do.
Yeah. Are you a middle child?
I am the baby.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yep.
We're both the youngest.
Young. Okay. Got it. All right. So you both saved a decent amount, and it was just a couple of years ago that you found the concept of FIRE, but you were living a lot of the, you know, frugal things you were saving. Yeah. And did you discover the FIRE stuff, David?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And then when he brought it to you, what did you think?
It was just kind of like, oh, so there's more people like us, like, because most of our friends, family members aren't super savers like us. Yeah. Like,
if we talk to them, it's like, must be nice. And we're like, we're similar income people, right? Yeah. Like, it must be nice to make a choice a specific way. Mm-hmm. Not like, wasn't a lottery winnings.
Yeah, yeah.
So We both get that. So we kind of just stop talking to people about stuff like that. We talk to each other, which is an echo chamber of frugality. It's a problem at some point in time.
All right, let's talk about the frugality. What kind of, we'll put in air quotes, what kind of silly stuff are you frugal about? Hmm. Chris, the producer, and I did an episode, and we still look at the cost per unit on like the bag of cheese, and I'll buy like 3 pounds of cheese for, you know, I don't need to save the 1 penny per ounce or whatever. But yeah, what kind of frugal things y'all do?
I like to use my library and, you know, instead of buy books.
Yeah. That's cool. Okay. That's
she hacks libraries. She's probably a member of the library in Longmont because she faked an address because they had a book she wanted and the two closest to uses
I still
libraries.
Have my hometown library card and the where we live now. And
every time they try to verify her address, she lies.
I do not. They just let me renew it.
Yes, yeah,
because I call up and I ask, and they, I just say my library card expired, and they just say okay, and they renew it. So I have multiple places that I can. Like my library is way bigger because they have sharing libraries with other ones. So
yeah.
I just have a massive library that I can borrow from.
That's good. How many? So I'm in three from different places that I've lived. It's all legal on my side. I'm not doing any fraud like you.
Yeah. So I have three library cards, but they have sharing libraries. So I can use like 10 to 12 different libraries.
Nice.
So that makes it. And then each one has a subscription to Hoopla. So instead of just having five Hoopla rentals a month, I can have 15.
Okay.
So
I don't even know what Hoopla is.
It's just a digital library.
Oh, okay. Okay. Like, got it.
It's one of the deliveries of the books, or the books on tape.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. What about you, David? What kind of frugal?
I'm from the Midwest. We're supposed to do everything ourselves, whether we're good at it or not. So things like, I like mechanics. I'm pretty good at working on a car, and I do want to keep doing that. Construction and home repair, not so great. But for a long time, I would do everything myself, whether it was the most miserable Saturday ever or not. We were obsessing over, you know, cost, price per unit, stuff like that. We're getting away from that. But even so, we even changed our purchasing behavior. You know, you think you're going to take the handcuffs off and then you're going to buy everything expensive in the store, your bill's going to go up. But no, you just kind of stop stressing about it.
Yeah.
You know, we would only buy like berries on sale for a while. You know, they're 99 cents, get 15 of them, and that's all I'm eating. Well, now it's like, are they fresh? Are, you know, if it's raspberries, are they red, or are they that terrible pink color they get in February that's like solid as a rock? Raspberries aren't expensive. I mean, if you're somewhere they're expensive, I'm sorry, but they're not expensive where we are. So just stop looking at it and get the thing you want. It's kind of where we've been going. But yeah, we don't budget. It's more of an observation of what we spent, past tense. And it's still not even that much. Even after cutting loose for 2 years, it's still not that much.
Interesting. And so quick side note on the buying stuff on clearance. Yeah, I'll get some clearance stuff. But here at Economy, I won't mention the person, but we'll call him Michael. That's his name. So it's Michael.
He's right there. No.
But he was like, oh yeah, there was like a salad on sale next door. So he bought like three of them and then put them in the fridge here at the Fairfield. But here, the refrigerators are like too cold. So like froze the stuff. So he was eating like frozen salad. It was like, it's awful.
Yeah, that's
But he was
rough.
Like, it was only a dollar. So, but funny story. He doesn't need to. He could have bought fresh salad.
I think all the t-shirts I wear are $2, but they're soft and they're nice. I don't care about t-shirts.
Yeah.
If I did, I would buy t-shirts I care about, but I don't. There's so many things I don't actually care about. But when you convince yourself you don't care about anything, there's maybe three things you're missing out on.
Yeah.
You know, some people really like quality shoes or, you know, even cutting loose, it doesn't then mean I want this and this and this and this and I'm now a bougie. Mm-hmm. I need the best restaurants, best hotels, best everything. It's not us. I'm glad it's not us. The one partner fighting the other one in the FI movement, it's fun to listen to. I don't think it's fun to be in.
No. Yeah, it's no fun.
So I'm glad. Go ahead. That's not our relationship.
Okay. So you quit your job in January.
Yes,
sounded like you decided in October.
Yeah. I feel like maybe I'd been circling it for a while, but it's like that glass shattering sound. Once you see it or once it's broke, you can't put it back together. I'd say probably the earliest moment was sometime in June, but I was listening to a podcast about salary renegotiation, and I'm actually pretty good at that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But the idea of renegotiating my salary was actually making me nauseous.
Oh, really?
Why? This idea that I would ask for more money and then it'd be implied that I was staying and that somebody might ask me for more when I already wanted to give less. It was just like, It's like that distraction. Like the problem is I don't want to be there.
Yeah.
But the thing I'll admit is I don't want to renegotiate my salary. And then I would reflect in and try to figure out why. And yeah, I mean, I would have taken 40 grand less if you took away this list of things I don't want to do.
Yeah.
But also I knew that wasn't going to happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, I do believe there are jobs where you can negotiate down responsibilities. This was more of a job that would say, sure, we'll try that. And it wasn't going to happen.
What kind of work were you doing?
I was a finance director.
Okay.
Yeah.
How'd you like that?
I love puzzle solving and accounting. I don't like repetition and explaining the same thing to the same people all the time. So yeah, I mean, I like the Rubik's Cube of finance and accounting and doing the optimized job and maybe doing something better than other people in the same field, you know, outperforming their portfolio or whatever it may be. I really find joy in that. But being a director, supervising people, that was more of a consequence of me just kind of wanting more money. Mm-hmm. You know, just moving up and people saying, yeah, look, you know, why don't you move to the next level, and not having a good answer.
Yeah.
But if and when I do go back to work, I could definitely entertain a number two position happily, assuming number one is not just sitting there trying to make me do their job because they're like, well, I hired you because I looked at your resume.
So do you have a specific plan for the mini retirement? As far as how long?
At least a year. I'm not going to let myself go back until a year.
Okay.
Some travel, but just like structured days. You know, I think everybody likes to focus on the one big trip they're going to take, but what about Tuesday on the second month? You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do that day? So I'm working out. I had a lot of positive habits when I was working. It just kind of wasn't alleviating all the stress. And now I go to the gym every day, which is not more work. It's just me breaking down my exercises into, you know, cardio one day, then lift, then cardio. I'm at the gym longer. I'm more open to talking to people instead of putting my headphones in and just like get out of my way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have short trips planned. I'm going to spend some summer trips with our son. I've got a big trip to the Southwest planned in the fall.
Where are you going?
I'm going to make a full loop all the way to the coast in Oregon and then down and then back through the South through Texas and everything. I'm probably going to get on Route 66 for a while. I need enough structure to get me out of bed, but I also need enough freedom to not really know what I'm going to do on any given day. Like, I might toss a coin and go west instead of east because that's what the coin said that day, because I didn't actually care which way I went that day.
Yeah.
So the kind of thing you can't do when you have to be back for work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's probably the biggest thing I planned. But we rented a cabin on Lake Michigan in May, and I'm going to be there most of the time. They're going to be there on the weekends and then for the last week. So kind of that blend of being at home, spending time with the family, and then a few solo trips by myself.
And I'll backtrack a little bit. So you got this at least 1 year mini retirement. Mm-hmm. How far along are you, like, too fine to be like totally financially independent?
If you go back, we're at a version of lean five. You could definitely survive on the portfolio. We're about 2/3 to what we spend right now. We saved 72% of our money last year. Even with me quitting my job, we're still saving 30%.
Okay.
Well. So we could both full retire if I don't go back to work in like 7 years.
Okay.
If I had grinded it out, it would have been the market has something to say about it, but let's say 3 to 5 max, even if the market tanked very specifically. And I thought, why 3 years? And then I never have to do this again. Why not? I don't have to do this right now. And then I'll see where I'm at, because I can entertain fractional CFOs. I have some standing offers from consulting firms. That gives me a sense of security as well. I can just throw a rock and hit somewhere that I could make money.
Yeah.
So I don't have that fear.
Well, it makes me think about the presentation earlier from Jess from the Pioneers. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we have our projections and it's like, yeah, if you kept grinding, it would be faster. But if you just maybe work part-time over the next few years, it's like just a couple more years than it would have been, but it's like one quarter of the stress and effort and all that stuff. And it's like, get out of that like horrible situation where you're like.
Well, and I'd give credit to, let's say, the first generation of FIRE people reporting not feeling good when they get to the number. I do, not everybody does, but me, and I'd say my wife both live vicariously through other people. If my older brother made a money mistake, I would see that and I'd say, oh, I see what he did. And he's ready to admit, but he had to learn it himself. But I don't want to do that. There's not a lot of people in, let's say, my hometown to listen to on what happens when you cross that finish line. Mm-hmm. So why not listen to the people? I assume they're not lying to me on podcasts, right? Yeah. Take some of their advice and say that, or, you know, the die with zero model. I'm currently 37. So what can I do right now? Well, I can hike a little better than I could 10 years from now. And just, I'm hoping to find something. If I don't want to go back to the industry, because I'm still not sure I do, maybe I can find something else to even just make a little money and do it part-time the rest of my life, or put my blood, sweat, and tears into it the rest of my life because it's awesome and it doesn't pay very well, which is fine too. Also formative for me, my stepfather, who was my father for all intents and purposes, passed away from cancer at 56. So he's doing that Midwest grind. I'm going to put in the full 40 and then I'm going to get to live my life and I'm going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And it got cut short. It was taken from him. And then on the polar opposite of that, my grandpa was retired my whole life. And he lived a retirement, man. I mean, he was going full speed, having a blast. So those two examples going, I'd love to have what my grandpa had, but I might have got dealt the hand that my stepdad got dealt. Even if I go back to the grind, I don't know I'm ever going to look back at this year and go, wow, what an idiot. Why did I think that taking a year off was going to make, you know, be just go back to work? Or I just can't imagine I'm going to say that. So I went with what made sense to me at that time.
You mentioned, David, that you were maybe the last one to know that you were going to quit. So I take it maybe you knew, Jill. Like, what's your take over the last year? This whole thing?
Well, I knew he wasn't extremely happy.
But I'm really good at being unhappy.
Didn't know if he could actually not work.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was fearful of that as well.
Yeah, of him, yeah.
Like, being with myself, by myself, Ada, I'm going to be so bored, I'm just going to watch TV all day. You know, those fears, I've met retirees like that.
Yeah.
They just watch TV all day.
Yeah. And when we talked about it, because I stayed home with the kids for 3 years, but I was home with children and doing activities and play dates and taking care of them, which is different than just being home with yourself all day. And then, him having his fear of, like, what am I going to do all day? And then he kind of worked on a plan and prepped himself for having the year off.
Hobbies and trying to find community. Well, I wouldn't say I was trying to find communities of people. I'd say I did find communities of people. I took a stand-up comedy class. I'm friends with a lot of people in that class. We message each other jokes and tags, and we're trying to do better. And I go to open mics. And sometimes you meet some really weird people. And sometimes you meet some people who are trying to do the same thing you're trying to do. And you have something in common and you click. And of course, there's the networking aspect. So you add each other to Facebook anyway, but then you have a conversation. And I've been doing that for over a year. And those structures, I joined a writer's group to help with the comedy. Mm-hmm. I like talking to those individuals. And it just, I think if I had just quit my job 3 years ago, I would have maybe just sat down and watched. Like, I had no plan, no structure. I lived with no plan, no structure for a long time. Like, serendipity is going to tell me what to do today. I'm not doing that, thankfully. And so far, it's been a lot of fun. The first 2 months were just me at home, not traveling, not trying to high-octane my life. And she comes home, and it's, what did you do today? And sometimes you don't have a great answer, but you're like, well, I did stuff, you know?
Stuff.
Yeah,
trust me.
I promise. I built a pillow fort and everything. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting. One of my friends from high school, I don't talk to him too much, maybe like every 5 years apparently, but he he had a decent exit from his company. And I don't know how much, like, he always exaggerated stories. So I was like, I have no idea, like, what the level of money he got. But anyway, he was like, yeah, I pretty much retired. And he sat at home. And it's the story you hear, played video games, mm-hmm. watched movies for 6 months, got depressed. And then he, like, kind of went back to his normal habits. So he, like, bought into a restaurant. So he was, like, half owner. And then, like, he always worked in hospitality. So he did, like, the restaurant grind again, like he did in whatever high school. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Sounds like a pendulum swing. Yeah. Like, too leisure, too much work again.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Luckily, I don't have that. So, like, I like a kind of a lack of structure most mm-hmm. of the time, and then like some anchor points, maybe a couple times a week. But I kind of want to never have more than like one thing per day, because like, it always something takes longer than you expect, or something unexpected, yeah. or there's traffic or whatever kind of thing.
So when I asked this weekend, I've been saying, I want to take about 4 hours worth of stuff and stretch it into about 8 hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And perfect. So, and that could be how long are the dishes? Okay, if you say 20 minutes, I'd be like, no, 40. It needs to be longer than that. So yeah. Decompressing every task. And a lot of those tasks that I would have said I didn't enjoy, like going to the store, I enjoy it. I'll walk to the store. Mm-hmm. I'll bring a cooler backpack with me. Mm-hmm. And it's a much longer task that way. And yeah, just enjoying what most people would call mundane things. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And you can make putting the dishes away a really long task. He walks from the kitchen to the living room, back, grabs a dish, puts it away.
One at a time.
Walks back to the other way.
I get like 2,000 steps putting the dishes away.
Is that what you really do?
Yes.
Yeah. Walk in the other room. Because I don't like putting the dishes away. So it actually, it's meditative in the sense where you kind of forget what you're doing, and I'll be sorting stuff out while I'm doing it.
Yeah, okay.
It sounds insane.
But yeah, that sounds crazy. Yep. I mean, you're putting up the dishes. So yeah. That's good.
I have clothes on, if that helps.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it does help.
You can
yeah.
make it.
I could make it weirder.
20-minute task.
So what have you noticed, Jill, from him not working? So it's probably took a little while to decompress. Maybe you're still decompressing, but like, I'm curious.
Yeah, possibly.
Have you noticed like he's more chill in this area of that?
Yeah, just kind of overall, just like a little more relaxed, like in general, like not, I don't know, stressed out or just tense, like just more mellow.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, which is good.
And I've been working on things in that realm for a long time. I stopped drinking 4.5 years ago, and you know, therapy, mindful tasks, working out with like a plan instead of just like, I'm going to work out and just kind of spinning my tires, mm-hmm. and setting goals, however small they are, but then having another goal when that goal is achieved. Right.
Yeah.
So there's always something I'm working toward. But practicing those individual things for years made this transition that much easier. I didn't say, I'll keep compressed and being as stressed as possible, and then I'm going to take up meditation the first day I quit my job. It's more like, let's see if any of this helps. And for me, meditation is not a daily practice. It's not, I find breath work helpful. I get really excited or jacked up in daily life. And it's just like taking a couple of breaths. But I mean, 22-year-old me didn't know to do that. It's like, you just want to punch a wall or something and you can't figure out what's wrong. I wish I had done better when I was younger with things like that. So those are all working toward the same goal, I suppose.
Yeah. And then Jill, do you have a strong like drive to retire as well?
I don't know. Like right now, I like what I'm doing. I like people I work with. Once my boss retires, depending on who comes into my office, I may not want to be there anymore. But as long as he's still working, then I'm good with what I'm doing.
And so with this and the amounts of money that we continue to save, she has the flexibility to say, I don't want to be here. And I do want to look for a different job. I want to look for the right job, the perfect job. So she might be off months. Whereas most people, I find they get upset with their job and they decide they're going to leave. They have to secure that next position. So even in that situation where she's got to have a couple of bad things happen before she doesn't like her job. There's still, she only has to not like it for a day if she's willing to admit that she doesn't like it. Whereas I was talking to somebody else about a salary negotiation. They were very upset. It did not go the way they wanted. And they were basically told to go back to work. To some extent, I go, well, but you can't just quit. Like you went in as if you could do something you couldn't do. And the result is upsetting, but I mean, I'm just going to pretend I'm your boss for 5 seconds. I say, what are you going to do about it? And we both know the answer is nothing. And maybe if it wasn't nothing, it would have went differently.
Yeah.
Because I believe that employee was valued. Mm-hmm. It's just, what can you get it for? Sometimes is what people are looking at, not what it's worth. You know, we all think that way in terms of cars. What can I get it for? I want to pay fair value for that car. No.
Yeah.
You want it cheap. And sometimes bosses look at their employees that way, and that sucks, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have a lot of flexibility and support at my...
And respect.
Yeah.
You know?
At my job. So it's...
And I need a sugar mama. Stop talking to her about this stuff. Yeah, if it went horrible for her, I'd have no problem going back to work. That is in the card. That's part of the plan at this point in time. So it'd just be on the timeline moved up. If something changes in the next year that is legitimate and not just in my head, a real substantial change in our circumstances, I would go back to before a year.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think you can find a reason. I'm not looking for a reason. I'm also going to have to test, is this real or is this... me just wanting to jump back towards safety.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Can you, if you want to, I'm curious, you mentioned you stopped drinking alcohol a few years ago. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Alcohol is my drug of choice. I used it to solve any and all problems. And because of the way I looked at the world, me needing things or wanting things or being stressed out, wanting to leave a crowded room was a problem. Well, having a drink solved that problem. And basically I poured it on every problem in the world. And it worked. You know, I gave a speech on behalf of my graduating class. 2-3 drinks, forgive me for saying, I crushed it. It did its job for a long time, but at some point in time, it just kind of stopped working. I was just drinking too much. It wasn't functional. It was a habit formed. And I tried moderation. I would say I was a problem drinker for like 15 years, but I had every excuse. I mean, I graduated top of my class twice while being a problem drinker. I'd never been arrested, never had any negative fallout, but yeah, it was creating a mental hole that I was not capable of getting out of while continuing my habits. So I had to cut that out. And then all the reasons I had done it just kept poking their head out. But now, I mean, so the person in front of me is very annoying. Instead of slamming a drink and putting up with that person, I excuse myself from the conversation, acknowledge I don't want to be there, and I move on. Mm-hmm. That was not day one. Day one was me trying to white knuckle and get through those things that I've always had this perception there's something wrong with me. If I'm an alcoholic, I implode. I don't explode. There's something wrong with me is really what was at the core. And I still feel like that a lot, but I'm more willing to acknowledge that's not true. Like there's not actually anything wrong with anyone. I hate to say it, but it's true. Existing, having needs, having wants. So it took a while for a lot of those to surface. I want to say the worst of it was between like 12 and 18 months where it's like, is this what living is like? It's like white knuckling through things I don't want to do. And not being able to get any gratification for successfully doing it either. Like, is this it? But then finding positive coping strategies and mechanisms and understanding that there's a lot of fun that can be had by just letting yourself do what you want to do and giving yourself permission to not do what you don't want to do. It's an ongoing journey. Now I'm going to pretend that I think every 5 years or every couple of years, you look back and you're like, I thought I had it figured out.
Yeah.
What was that guy thinking?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Interesting. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I have several friends from different places that I've lived that are sober now. I think I'm lucky because I don't have, I guess, the same addictive trait that some other folk. I definitely consume too much alcohol and have made some poorer decisions, but like you said, like no major issues. And I think like some of my friends, they had some major issues and made like bigger mistakes and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So the other odd, interesting part is like I'm a beer judge. So like part of my identity is like tied up with a bunch of my friends where I judge beer and blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. again, lucky to have, I'm okay to moderate. Although when y'all have seen me this week, certainly I had a few extra beers and more than what I would normally have.
Yeah. Just I'm thankful just that I could turn, when I finally was like, no, this is not working, I could turn it off. Some people can't do that. Some people go back and forth on the addiction cycle. I'm probably a little too far over from what you're talking about, where I could just dip my toe in and then dip my toe in again. So I had to turn it off. But in terms of, I would say that makes me an addict. If there's a bell curve of addicts, I'm on the, let's say, easier side of that, where I look around and I say, I do understand how you feel and I do understand what's going through your head and going on, but I don't understand how you can't turn it off, mm-hmm. right? Like, and that's not to pass judgments, that's to say, I can't understand a struggle that I'm not participating in. Yeah. You know, I would have programmed responses. I would almost grab beer every time I walk by it in a store and then I would guilt myself. But then it's just like, oh, it's just a habit. It's like someone's just trying to chew their fingernails and trying to stop. But that shame cycle's pretty gone by now. If moderation had worked, which I did try, then I wouldn't have told you that story I just told you. But no, I go into bars with friends and they drink and I drink water and it doesn't bother me. Some people can't do that. Some mm-hmm. people can't quit and be around people who don't. And so I'm thankful that I can, because it doesn't preclude me from social experiences that I did. I loved going to the bar with my friends.
Sure.
Getting drunk and doing stupid stuff. But like now I just don't get drunk.
You still do stupid stuff. You don't have to be drunk.
Yeah. So I'm very thankful to be on that side of the bell curve, I suppose. But yeah, I'd like to have what you're describing.
Yeah.
Sounds way better. Could I have a beer?
Let's shift it a little bit to the stand-up comedy. So I love stand-up. But who do you like to watch?
Oh, everybody. I watch everything that comes on Netflix. Pretty much anything I can hear about, I'll check it out on YouTube. Or, you know, there's, you meet some touring comedians and you're like, oh, you have a special. I want to check that out. Once you get into anything, you can start to see the cracks forming.
Yeah.
And that, I don't like that because I was just an absolute fan for so long. But like, my favorite comics are kind of who you'd expect. Bill Burr, Dave Chappelle. I like people who can like crack a topic that's really hard to talk about, or they take such a specific angle. Like Neil Brennan is a tremendous writer turned performer. And I find that to be very interesting. Yeah, I watch everything. Some comics think if they watch other people, they're just going to steal from them. But I think every comic is they're imitating somebody, whether it be their uncle or their grandpa or their mom, just somebody that they thought was hilarious. And they don't register that. We're all can't say that word. We're all imitating somebody. But yeah, I mean, joke structure is specific. It's scientific. There are very few people who are really breaking that mold and they're not just telling you a bunch of punched up jokes.
Yeah.
The best are just convincing you. They're telling you a story while they're telling you a bunch of punched up jokes. So I've studied it. I love learning about it, but I would say I still haven't completely found my voice. Mm-hmm. I've been able to go up in front of pretty much every audience and find a way to make them laugh. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of the writing I'm doing for like as long as I've been doing it. I'd say I'm in the above average category, but I mean, I have so much to learn. Just watching other people really helps, and seeing, you know, what angle you can take on. Every one of us could talk about the same topic and the jokes are not even close. It's awesome.
I
love stand-up. Even if I want to stop doing it, I'm still going to really enjoy watching it. And I like writing more than I like performing.
Yeah. So what's the writing process then? What do you do?
Generally, if you can find an experience where I had an emotion, effectively, a lot of my jokes that people really get into are when I'm confused or annoyed, which happens a lot. But I mean, as simple as somebody, they just did something weird. Some guy walked up in front of me and he set down a lawn chair in front of me. And this is not a place you would do that. Like, and I'm like, what is he doing? So I'll go tagging this joke, trying to figure out what he's thinking. I'll never ask him what he's doing because that will ruin the fun for me. Got a really good joke about, I was in a kickboxing class, for lack of a better term. And the girl I was partnered with had a wrist brace on. And every time I kicked a pad, she would moan. Yeah, moan. And I'm like, is this her thing? Or what's going on? And other people just started looking over. So I'm like, this is definitely like, I'm not, this isn't in my head. This sound is not normal. And then I was like, what if I kick harder? And I'm like, am I into this? Like, is this my thing? So the joke, the premise and what exactly happened is very funny. To be told on stage, it requires turns and analogies and subverting expectations in a very specific way. And the audience just loves it. But there is this awkward, is he telling us, is this a sexual story? And so the closer of that joke is, after everybody's done laughing at one of my tags, I just go, you guys are taking this story a lot better than my wife did. And then I've immediately become a philanderer when it was just, you know, so it, but it really happened. Yeah, and it was really weird. And I never asked her what was going on or why. She kept doing what she was doing and I kept doing what I was doing. And then I went home and I told my wife.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, that's how y'all met.
Yeah. And she's right here. Nice. Yeah. But usually something like that. Confusion.
But the whole part about me not taking it nice is...
Oh, yeah. She has to be the wife. Yeah. There's some cliches. I'd say there's about 60% truth in any given joke. And then all the... One time I started with like what I would call an 11-minute story with a prep that I thought was funny. By the time I was done, I cut it down to 60 seconds, and then I added 30 seconds of punched-up jokes because that's what you had to do. But at the core of it, it still made me laugh. I tell one joke, and I cannot help it. I have this like smirk on my face, and sometimes I'll laugh into the microphone and like turn away. The audience responds so much to this. Whereas I could give you the joke, you could memorize it and you could go up and tell it and you can make them laugh, but you can't do that thing unless you actually think it's as funny as I think it is.
Yeah.
And, or I've got a horrible tag coming and that lady who's laughing is either going to stop or maybe she's going to laugh even harder. I love making a middle-aged woman try to hide that she's laughing from her family because she's like, they can't know that I think that's hilarious. That's like one of my favorite things.
And just quick definition so people watching, listening know. So tags and punching up, what do you mean by that?
Oh, okay. So punching up. So I wouldn't tell a joke right now. Our conversation is conversational. Tags are, so the funny thing already happened and we're going to just, I'm going to keep saying words and or adding to that joke and making you laugh at the same thing two or three times, as many times as I can before you are bored with it. Mm-hmm. So tag's not saying anything new, but adding to the joke. And then, yeah, punching up is just taking what would be a story and saying, oh, let's turn it up to 11. Like, let's take what you wrote, which is good and truthful and has an emotion at its core, and let's turn it up to 11. Like, my wife, yeah, you guys are taking this story a lot better than my wife. Which at the beginning, I think I'm saying, oh, I kick, punch, and elbow women because I'm trying to explain why I have a woman partner because I believe in equality. So the finish is, you're taking this better than my wife. I guess I'm only allowed to kick, punch, and elbow men from now on. She doesn't believe in equality. And that's just kind of how it ends. But I mean, none of that is true. And it's all designed to just make you laugh at what I'm trying to tell you, which it's still a very odd. And I don't think a lot of people who go to classes have that experience.
No, that's great. And it's fun too, because I would not be like, hey, tell a joke. Because like, that's
Oh, that rude. Happened like 15 times this week.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
If
but you still got it out. Yeah. We're like laughing because we're talking about
it. But I turned it into a conversation. I could go into it. It's programmed. It's up here memorized 100%. But it's not normal. It doesn't feel normal. You feel an obligation to laugh where you know you're supposed to. And that is very weird for me. But it'd be like if I said I like to work out and you're like, oh, do 10 push-ups. And I go, we're in the lobby of a hotel. It's not the proper venue for 10 push-ups.
Yeah. Although last night there was a push-up contest over here, which was weird.
Oh. Yeah.
And people were doing headstands.
Oh.
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah.
That happened. But there was drinking. So it was acceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this was effectively
a
bar.
Sense.
Yeah. This was a bar last night, right?
Yeah. So let's go back to finance stuff. I kind of, we jumped around and I was all disjointed, but It seems like both of you have like good financial sense, and I'm curious like how you guys manage the, you know, the budget and or expenses. I know you said you kind of do expense tracking now versus like pre-budgeting, but like,
but there were different times where we did budget and such.
Yeah, how was it set up? Say like when y'all first got together, did you like combine finances?
We both have accounting degrees. We're both very frugal, but she looked at me and said, "You're doing something bigger than me." So she would take, she would do daily
Excel spreadsheet with like 12 different tabs that all like 40 work together.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't used to be that many. Now there's way more, but they all build off each other. Yeah. And if you change one thing here, it'll change it in four taps over and tracking. And I'm like, that's way more sophisticated than what I'm doing. So you just go ahead and do that. And I trust that you got that handled. And then I just kind of lived my normal life. And
she would handle day-to-day track. Like she would try to control spending on a day-to-day basis. I think only one time, and it was shortly after we moved in together, I had said, you've spent a lot of money at, I don't know, Walmart, Amazon, something like that. And I said, this is more than I'm used to. Is this going to happen every month? I think she tightened up the spending. At that point, we were only making $60,000 for a family of four. And we're still saving pretty substantially, but not a lot of conversations about changing. It's more about, I track this, I want to know where I'm at, and I want you to know where we're at too. But yeah, all I have to do is update our net worth on a quarterly, and I update the budget past tense, and it will tell me how much I'm supposed to have for 6 months cash on hand, how close we are to our FI number, a variety of other metrics. It all just builds off each other. So it's complexity for simplicity, because, well, no, it'll tell me how much money.
Come on, man.
No, it'll tell me how much money I'm supposed to put in the market.
Right,
but if instead of recalculating 6 months cash on hand or having a static number, it's always just, like we plan to pay for college for our kids. Picking a flat number is problematic because you don't know if that's going to buy what you needed to buy 10 years from now. So we took the lowest cost state schools in Michigan, punched them in, and basically pick one of those schools. Or if you want to go somewhere more expensive, you're going to get the average of those schools and you can figure out the rest.
Okay.
But the schools tell me how much they cost. I don't have to look it up. You know what I mean? Like, it was because this seems fair. And if you just said you're going to give each kid $20,000, well, our kids are 8 years apart. Mm-hmm. 20 grand to one is not 20 grand to the other. What I mean? Like, so it is complicated, but then it's settled and you look at it and you're like, oh, I get why I did that.
And once we were together, it's not like I had a set, like, I only have $100 to spend at the grocery store. I didn't, when I was younger, I had like a budget set up for myself of like knowing how much like you have, this much you can allot for gas and this much for food and this much for that. And then it just became like a known thing. So it was just like, I know what I'm buying when I go to the grocery store. I don't look at how much I have for this or that. I just go buy what I usually buy and move on with my life.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, I didn't ask him how much our grocery budget is. It was just like,
yeah.
We shuffled together pretty well. I'd say we were on the same page, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to talk about it a lot.
Yeah. We're both not really into consumer goods.
Yeah.
We've lived in our house now for 7 years. There's one thing hanging on the wall. It's a scratch off map of states that we've traveled to.
Yeah.
I have the same microwave. It's moved around with me. I've had it for 15 years now.
You said microwave?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's moved around. Dishes, I got them the year I graduated. We still have the same dishes. Like, we're not fancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a blended thing of, I had my silverware, he had his. They're just mixed in a drawer. Like, I don't need stuff to match. Like,
right.
We're not into
typical
consumer
items.
I
gotcha. Yeah, we were using, like, Christmas plates year round for many years. Yeah. And people would come over and like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So it's easy to save money when you're not just like buying things for the sake of buying it, like, oh, that's really pretty, and I'm gonna like
retail
the decorations on my wall every week.
Retail therapy is not a thing for either one of us. Mm-hmm. So
I think I don't know how to decorate, so that's why I don't participate in it. So it just makes it a lot easier too. Yeah.
Very good. Okay, well, as we're wrapping up here, you mentioned you have some travel coming up, but yeah, what else do you have planned for your mini retirement?
Yeah, I mean, the travel is the things I would say would be like monthly or yearly that I'm looking forward to. But on a day-to-day basis, before I quit, looked at the budget and said, we actually don't have to change anything because we were saving my entire salary. So you don't have to cut it. I didn't want my choice to impair her lifestyle or our kid's lifestyle. But at the same time, I'm not surprised to find that I'm doing things that save us money, right? It's just not spending as much as I would have thought. So when it gets warm in the summer, I've got a few things to do on the house, but instead of I'm going to get it all done on Saturday and I'm going to hate every second of it, I'm going to spread those things out. It really is just decompressing. I don't hate the life I was living. I hate the job I had, right? It's if you wake up and you had to pick what you have that given day, you have to start this podcast. Now you can start it where it is. Would you start it today? And I do that with certain things. And the answer is yes to most of the things. It's pretty awesome to realize that and get the clutter out of the way to realize that. You're like, wow, I have so much to be grateful for. I don't have planned and I'm not planning complicated things, right? Like I just had a friend on Facebook. Oh, we took 5 weeks off and we went to 14 national parks and it was the trip of a lifetime. Trip of a lifetime gives me like goosebumps in a bad way, like a shudder up the back. Like, so you hit the peak and it's downhill from here, or like, I don't want the year of a lifetime. I want a year that helps me with giving me a base, and next year will be better. And the year after that will be better. And yes, I'll go back to work, but I'll try to keep as many positive habits that I've developed to go back to work with and recognize a toxic environment before it burns me out. I can report, I did not burn out. I was trending towards burnout. No amount of working out and breathing and all these positive things was alleviating. It was a slowly sinking ship, but I did not burn out and I did not need to sleep 14 hours a day for 3 weeks just to be able to breathe again and clear the fog. But like maybe recognize toxic relationships and things like that earlier and move on faster, you know, because I don't delude myself to believe that I'll go back to work and I'll keep working out for hour and a half, 2 hours when I go do it and keep that positive twist on everything. And I'll keep all these tasks decompressed. It's just not going to happen. Not letting go of the concept behind it and trying to make sure I'm getting what I need out of life. That's my goal for this year. And it's days that add up to a year, I guess is how I'm looking at it. And I don't know that, I mean, I've been in some bad moods or whatever, but I don't know that I've had a bad day. And I hopefully, even the bad day is still better than like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when I first stopped drinking, I was like between a 0 and a 2. Now most days, like I think the worst I get is a 4. You know what I mean? But like I live between 7 and 8, which I would, if you told me I could live at a 7 for the rest of my life, 3 years ago, I would have given you everything I had to just let me be there. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, I have days that go above that and like trying to capture that or even just trying to chase it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Sometimes you don't need to capture, but yeah, it's just simple decompressed living and acknowledging what matters to me and doesn't matter to me, you know, because there are things that I like to have specific nice things, just like everybody else. But most of the time, that's not the answer. You know, I'll eat off your Christmas dishes. I wouldn't have even said anything. I'd be like, hey, he does what we do. It's just the way it is. It
makes sense, yeah. One thing that's important to me is sleep.
I sleep tremendously. She needs a new bed.
Yeah? You need a new mattress?
Yeah.
You do, okay.
She's heard that line before. You can see she's a little skeptical.
All right. Well, I sleep really poorly when I travel, especially to economy, because I end up staying up too late and like having drinks, which totally wrecks my sleep.
Yeah.
However, I've been rooming with the same guy, Bob Haynes, friend of the show.
Yeah.
And many people do know Bob.
We know Bob.
We know Bob.
And it's a whole thing. And he and I love it freezing. So we like have it turned down to like 60 degrees up there, and it feels cold when you walk in. So that does help a little bit. Mm-hmm. The thing with the ghost beds, it has like cooling technology in there. So are you a hot sleeper or?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this could help. I will send you the link. But yeah, we have a ghost bed Lux, and it's sort of like the softer one. And there's a 3-minute sleep quiz that you could take, or our man Rich Bernstein, he's here. He's like the one that hooked me up with the advertising and all that stuff, but he can actually answer questions. But they have a 3-minute sleep quiz, so you can figure out which mattress you would like. And then there's a 101 night at home sleep trial, so you can test it out, see if you like it. If it doesn't work for you, they figure it out. I don't know all the logistics on the back end. Yeah, we love our ghost bed, and I can't wait to get back home, because I've been sleeping horribly. But yeah, thanks to Ghostbed, y'all can check it out. You can save 50% if you go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi. And we won't end quite yet, because I'm curious. So he's off for the year. And is there anything that you're maybe like looking for him to do while he's out? It's kind of an open question. And if you don't have a great answer, that's okay.
Not really. Like, I want him to take time and enjoy. When he said he needed to stay home, I told him, yeah, that's fine. Like, I stayed home for 3 years. I got to do what I wanted and needed at that point in time. And you can do that and have time for you. Mm-hmm. So whatever he wants to do, like, he went to Camp Fi last weekend, which happened to be perfect because I'm in class and I had a lot of stuff going on. So it was like, you didn't miss anything because I came home from work, got kid food. He was off playing. I sat down at the laptop and I was there until it was, hey, it's bedtime, and did that for 3 days in a row. So you were off having adventure.
It's probably better that I wasn't there.
Yeah. So right now, it just kind of what's going on with me and my career plan and what he's doing kind of is a good perfect balance, and it's working good.
Right. She's very supportive of me, and I try to be very supportive of her. Yeah, I mean, she didn't have a list of things she wanted me to do. But I mean, we communicated. We try to communicate very well. I was like, okay, I'm getting burned out as a finance director, but I'm not quitting to be a stay-at-home parent. We have an 11-year-old. Doesn't need a stay-at-home parent. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm primary when it comes time to take to like medical visits or whatever. But I was telling her, we have season tickets to MSU hockey. They are crushing it. They might go all the way to the Frozen Four this year, which is in St. Louis. And I go, that's pretty cheap compared to like the Final Four or whatever. And I love that stuff. I'm going to be off.
Yeah.
I might want to go. It's contingent on something that I can't win the first two games. So, but like, we're not going to all go to that. I might go to that. That changes that weekend. To have that flexibility to say, not you're a single parent for a weekend, but kind of. I mean, I'm leaving, because if you think I'm going to go home and be, you know, a teacher and a stay-at-home parent and all that stuff, I think I'd rather just take the money and just keep trucking, and then I'll quit. Me and her will quit at the same time.
Yeah.
But that communication, to not like wake up in the middle of March and be like, I'm leaving. And she's like, I thought you were the stay-at-home parent.
Right.
Specifically, it's like, we communicate about that in advance. I don't think I'm surprising her with what I'm doing or the way I'm acting. And I think a lot of people do assume the other person knows what they're talking about with a few words. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to surprise her with anything. And she is supportive, as opposed to the person who's like publicly supportive. And in quiet, it's like, I thought you were going to build us a garage. Or it's like, I don't know why you thought that.
Yeah. Okay. So expectations are set and it's aligned. And
I hope so.
That fixes most things. Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
You'll find out later.
Yeah.
Sort of the final question. So you'll be going on the road trip, and that's longer, right?
One big trip, a lot of mini trips. Like Tuesday, Wednesday, me and the son might go do something fun. Those would be like Midwest trips, like Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, not Ohio. because it's horrible here. No, but the Upper Peninsula, stuff like that. And she's welcome on as many as she can, but she has a finite number of vacation days.
Right.
Well, the kid's off the whole summer. I'm off the whole summer. So she's the limiting factor on that. But yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, well, the real question is like when you're gone for like the long trip, like, will that be tougher or you're going to be still somewhat busy and you're working on your class and whatnot?
It'll be fine. Like I'm
very self-sufficient.
I'm very independent, cheerful.
So it works perfect for a long trip.
Yep. Yep. Now that he's not working, you know, I asked him to, the school called me and I was like, hey, are you busy? Can you go pick him up instead of me leaving work to pick him up?
Yeah, I'm at home doing nothing and she'd go pick him up. Well, they called me. I'm like, I would just, let me love you.
Him being gone, I'm completely fine because I am a little too self-reliant.
Got it.
Yes, okay. I second that.
Very good. All right, well, let's wrap up and we can go to the next thing. So thanks for joining me. Really enjoyed the chat. You guys don't have anything, but if people wanted to try and get in touch with you or Facebook or some kind of thing, like, or no, not at all, they have to see you at an event.
So her not at all.
Okay.
You can find my comedy on Facebook and Instagram probably.
Okay. If you send links, I'll put it in there. So I can do that. Check out the comedy. All right. So it's like you doing open mics and stuff?
Yeah. It's usually telling people where I'm going to be. It's not me posting a lot of videos. I like making the people in front of me laugh. Not okay. Throwing my video into somebody's feed and they're not even sure what it is.
Okay. All right.
Not to insult people who do that, but okay. I need to find my voice for a while.
All right.
That's how I feel.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah. Let's go hang out.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So this is your first economy that y'all are attending, right?
Yes. Yep.
How's it going so far? And I'll ask you first, Jill.
It's going good. I'm a bit of a introvert, so lots of people. So sometimes peopling is not easy.
I've been around you a little bit, but it seems you seem normal.
Yeah.
Like you're not freaking
I
out.
I can put on a...
Yeah, yeah.
I can be normal
to
people, but not want to people on the inside.
And then did you know any people here before you got here?
Two that are from the Lansing and Grand Rapids Phi group.
Oh, okay. Who are they? Have I met them? Do you know?
Brittany and Tiffany. Yeah. And I don't know if you met them.
Okay.
I don't think. We were never in the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember, but it's a blur. There's so many people. So it's like, how about you, David? How's it going? Is it what you thought?
I'm good. Yeah. I just came from Camp Fi in Florida. So there's like about, let's say, 30 people sprinkled throughout the audience that I know.
From the camp.
Yeah, basically. And that makes the opening events a little bit easier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just kind of bouncing around meeting people. I'm the extrovert. Yeah. So meeting people is pretty easy for me.
So you're having a blast running around. Yeah. Yeah.
Occasionally I look over, see her struggling and bail her out.
So and I recorded that Introvert's Guide to Economy. Right. Did you check it out or did you? It's okay. It's okay if you did.
I did not.
I meant it for you.
I know. I don't listen to the podcast.
Any podcast.
Any. I read books.
Yeah.
And I just found graphic audiobooks, which are not just narrated. It's like a whole movie with like background noise and stuff happening in a whole cast of people. So it's like listening to a movie with your eyes closed. Mm-hmm. So.
And she's in school full time, and yeah. She works full time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you're a little busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I listen to all your podcasts. Yes. So I listened to that one. I did, but I'm not an introvert. So.
Yeah. Well, it would. There was a couple things. I mean, we're on the last day, so none of this will help you very much now. But I think one of the best things was like how to, in air quotes, get out of a conversation, mm-hmm. which it can be positive or negative. That was like one of the big struggles where you're just like, all right, I don't know how to extract myself from this conversation. And basically you're just like, oh, I had a great time chatting with you. I want to make sure I chat with other people.
Yeah.
Short and simple. Like you don't have to make any other, mm-hmm. but you seem to be doing fine.
Yeah.
In extreme cases.
I can fake it.
I've yelled smoke bomb and then ran away. Not here, but I did do that once and I stand by it. It was
There's
a great exit.
Ways.
It was a great exit. It wasn't a professional exit by any standard, but it was a great exit.
Yeah. And one thing that I've been doing each day, and actually just before I came down, I was taking a little nap.
Yeah.
And I think I've noticed maybe more people are telling me about it because I said, it's cool if you take a nap or if you're just like, if you need to take a break, take a break.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's been fun for me too. It's been like even more new people. One thing I tried to do is like, I did this yesterday. I went with a group for lunch of people I'd never saw them before. So I was like, met a whole new group of folks. So
nice.
It was cool.